Sunday Kit is coming up now.
Get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the Snake Pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much. Snake Pit is brought to you by, I want to say, American Leak Detection. Right, Dylan?
Correct.
Okay. Now we're partying. Now we're getting things going here. All right. We're live at Hooters in the West End. Come join us. We got lots going on out here. Giving away $50 every single hour to our friends out here in Hooters merch and food and all that good stuff. And drink specials galore, as they always have. So, the death of Clive Davis. I don't know if that name means anything to you guys when it comes to the world of music, but we always hear about these guys, the behind-the-scenes guys, and how, oh my God, you're not. You hear the artists say, if it wasn't for Clive Davis, then I don't know where I'd be right now. And I always heard that as a kid. You'd hear Ahmet Erdogan. That was, you know, he was one of the names, a Led Zeppelin guy. But Clive Davis was like the guy. And Clive passed away last week.
The names that I seem to remember were Seymour Stein and Jimmy Iovine.
Yeah.
Those were the ones that I remembered.
Yeah. And like Quincy Jones is obvious, you know, I mean, because he's a musician and all that. But these guys are literally.
These are like music executives.
Right. Behind the scenes guy. And when Clive Davis was a lawyer at Columbia Records, when he decided that he wanted to be more involved in the actual business and not just be a dude that's back there, his run of success is absolutely one of the most staggering things in the history of the medium. And when the Columbia exec said, all right, we're going to give you a chance. Go find us a band. And this is in the late 60s. And he goes, okay, I'll do that. And so he loved music, and so he just went on basically a search. And the very first band he ever signed, he saw them in Monterey in 1967, and they were nothing at the time, and he signed this band. It's Janis Joplin. So he sees him play. He says that he had this spine-tingling moment that he was witnessing a musical and social and cultural revolution, and he signed them on the spot. And Columbia's like, you signed that and her? And the first album, the first band that he ever signed under their Columbia deal went to number one in a couple of weeks. And so suddenly he is the golden child of Columbia Records. They're like, how did you do this? So he's famous for taking these bands that nobody really could figure out. And there was a jazz fusion band from Chicago that nobody would touch because nobody knew what they were. And he went to the band and said, you know, I really like you guys, and I think there's more to you than this jazz fusion thing. I've got some ideas. And so he signed this band. Again, nobody wanted to touch him. And he signed the band Chicago. And that's a weird band. You can lower it just a tad there. Chicago doesn't make any sense, especially back then.
Yeah, but for those who just remember Peter Cetera, 80s Chicago, 70s Chicago was way different.
This is them. I mean, the horns and 50 different instruments. Crap going everywhere, songs that were way too long for the radio back then. But he signed them, and again, instantly, they reached the top of the charts. So, he had a moment where he was friends with Carlos Santana, but Santana was with another label. And when Santana had left his label, and in the 90s, and was like, man, I got these songs. I don't know what to do with them. It's just weird stuff right now. I'm old. I have no idea how to approach this. And Clive Davis goes, well, I got an idea for this. And he presented him with this riff. And Clive Davis pairs him with Rob Thomas, and this becomes the biggest song, excuse me, of the 90s or early 2000s. I mean, like, it was huge.
Yeah, and I don't know how commonplace the feature was at that time. I mean, now it's like
right.
Every song is somebody featuring on somebody else's track. But to get a bunch of different singers to accompany Santana was kind of out of the box.
Yeah. This, again, and this relaunched Santana's career. Nobody knew who he was by this point in the late 90s, and he became this absolute monster. In the early 70s, there was a kid running around Jersey, and he hooked up with Bruce Springsteen, saw a couple of shows of his, and was like, you got something. And they signed him. And he goes, I'm going to give you a year to come up with your own record. A year. Gives him a year. Spruce comes back with the record and had not very much at all by way of anything that Clive Davis saw as a hit. And he goes, none of this works. Go back in the studio. I need two songs and make sure that they're hits. And one of them was Spirit in the Night, which was his first hit. And then the next album was Born to Run. And
wow.
Bruce is like, I wouldn't have had a chance. If I would have put that first album out, it would have been a total clunker without Clive telling me what to do. 3 months after he signed Bruce Springsteen, he signs this guy, and this album was the very first thing that he put out. And as Billy Joel said, Clive Davis knew every sound that was good, every sound that was right, and every sound that was a hit. And he made this record. I'm like, you don't think about things like that. And obviously, Billy Joel from that moment on is just a monster. He took a very little-known Sly in the Family Stone, who was big in certain cultures. Probably figure it out, but wanted to be absolutely huge. And he told Sly, he goes, you need to go write more pop-friendly songs if you want to be this guy that's this type of monster. And very reluctantly, he agreed and delivered this as his first song to Clive Davis, saying, is this good? And Dance to the Music became one of his two signature songs. And kickstarted that whole scene. He did the same thing with the next song, Dave, with Earth, Wind, and Fire and Shining Star. They were just an R&B type band that he turned into a 70s absolute monster.
And it's funny because you often hear about, from established stars, about the label, like, trying to meddle.
Right.
And trying to change things. But when it's kind of flipped, when you have these kind of up-and-coming artists or artists that haven't hit the level yet, they are looking for guidance.
Yeah, and they all paid attention to him. It took, like, two signings for everyone to want a piece of Clive Davis. He signed Aerosmith in the early 70s, and because they were playing some dingy, dirty bar in New York City, and suddenly they're like, what do you want us to do? And the song that he had in his mind was Sweet Emotion.
Banger.
Oh, an unbelievable banger. And they credit Clive Davis because they're like, nobody really wanted a piece of us at the time.
Does Clive take credit for Love in an Elevator?
I hope not. I'm hoping they were done by that point. Okay, so here's one that nobody ever thought of, and this shows his genius. Kenny G, who is like sax and easy listening, and nobody cared about it at the time, and he goes, you got something. There's something there, and they put together. And he signed with Clive in 1982, and this song and this stupid album ends up being one of the biggest selling albums of the 80s.
It invented a genre.
It created a genre that Clive Davis was like, "This will work, man. There are weird people out there that like this.
People will love smooth jazz."
Yes, smooth jazz was because Clive Davis took a shot on Kenny G, of all people. I don't think that we're real happy about that as 80s kids that love rock and roll.
No, that was a punch out. What kind of fortune was this guy sitting on?
Oh, my God. So I'll do you one better. So back in the early 70s, there was a band. They were something. They were there. But they were disappointed with their label, and they were like, "We got to sign it with a new label." So they put out this record; it hadn't been released yet. Clive Davis hears it and goes, "What do you want? Because you're getting ready to be the biggest band in the world." And he was speaking of this album. He signed Pink Floyd, and out comes "Dark Side of the Moon" and "Wish You Were Here." The first official album was "Wish You Were Here" on Columbia or Arista, wherever he was at the time. But he hears things that nobody else did. He signed Whitney Houston when she was 17 years old, or famously, or something like that.
Jeez.
And gave her 2 years, said, or 2 or 3 years, like, "You got all the time in the world. You come up with what you want to do. We trust you. Here's your money." Which, that wasn't the case for anyone back in the day, but he knew he had something, and this was her first song. I Want to Dance with Someone. I know, but I mean, dude. He was the hit master. And that is like... that's like a thumbnail of what he did, of who he was associated with. Like, everybody was with Clive Davis.
Yeah, well, and then when he had his spin-off label in his latter years, Alicia Keys was his big discovery.
Exactly, yep. He discovered Alicia Keys.
He just signed everybody.
He was brilliant. So if you'd hear about behind-the-scenes music, guys, and you'd kind of roll your eyes a little bit, don't ever roll your eyes at the great Clive Davis, who passed away at the age of 90 last week. He is a monster.
Put him in.